Well, let's get into the class tonight, Between the Testament. What a fascinating period. A period where God did not speak through the prophets, but there is so much written history. It just exploded during that 400 years. However, Daniel told us what was going to happen before it happened. Now, here's where we've been. The late Persian period, the Greek era, which includes the Ptolemies in Egypt and the Seleucids and the Antiochus kings in Syria, they're all Greeks. That's why I set them out. It's all really a Greek period. And this period of the Maccabees is somewhat a Greek period, but it's kind of a reaction against that. And that's where we're going to settle in tonight. I'm going to try to tell you the story of the Maccabees that starts with Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. And I'm hoping to bring this all the way down to the beginning, or at least get us right ready for Herod the Great. So we got a lot of ground to cover. Now, Tony, you're going to cover some of this, I think, in your class. If I say something you are going to say, go ahead and say it, because everybody's not here tonight. And this is material that I have to go over and over and over to get it right in my mind, because there's so much going on here. Here's where we've been. Cyrus and the fall of Babylon, Cyrus the Persian. And then the Persian, it should be Persian kings and their failure in Greece. And we talked about the two kings that went over trying to take Athens. Both of them failed. And what happened? And that began the downfall, really. That was where the Persian Empire reached its peak and started its downfall. And then the rise of Alexander the Great, the Macedonian, who came in and conquered all that Persian territory as a missionary, spreading Greek culture everywhere he went, establishing cities as centers for that Greek culture to spread. And we talked about Alexandria and how important that city was going to be. Come on in. We're just getting started. You're tardy, but you're present, okay? All right, very good. And then after that kingdom broke up, we talked about Daniel 11 with the kings of the north and the kings of the south. Now, I went over that last week, and we just went through king after king after king after king, and I don't think you need to remember all of that. I think you needed to be aware of it and realize that there was constant fighting and intrigue between the kings in Syria, the Antiochus kings, and the Ptolemies in Egypt. And that's the main point to get out of that. That carried us down to Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. And Daniel told us about him, that he was coming. We see it beginning. Come on in. Hey, I thought you were sick. All right. Well, you made it. I'm glad you made it. All right. Then don't give it to us. Okay. All right. All right. Here's some things in Daniel 8 that point to Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. By him, the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of the sanctuary was cast down. He was against the daily sacrifice. And it says he cast down truth to the ground. How many times have you heard that expression? Truth cast to the ground will rise again. And here it talks about he casting truth to the ground. How long is this going to last? The vision of the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot. How long is that going to take place? And when the transgressions are come to full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. He's going to be a vile person. It's going to call him here. He shall destroy wonderfully and prosper, and shall destroy the mighty and holy people. Well, that'd be the Jews, wouldn't it? And he'll cause craft to prosper in his hand. That's corruption and evil. He shall stand up against the prince of princes, which might be here the high priest. Antiochus Epiphanes is going to appoint his own high priest. It's going to be of the tribe of Benjamin. It's not going to be of the tribe of Judah. That's going to upset some of the Jews. but not all of them, as we'll see. But he shall be broken without hand. Daniel 11, where he's called a vile person. Daniel 11, 21. But he shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant. That's the high priest, the fake high priest that they'll have. He shall do that which his fathers have not done, nor his fathers' fathers. He is going to be harder on the Jews than any of those kings that had come before him and what he's going to do. Hello, Steve. You're tardy, okay? You got a demerit, but you'll be counted present. All right. Antiochus Epiphanes, his heart shall be against the Holy Covenant. His indignation shall be against the Holy Covenant. And he'll have intelligence with them that forsake the Holy Covenant. See, what's going to happen in Israel and in Jerusalem? There's a bunch of Jews that are going to go along with this stuff. They say, we need to be Hellenists. And the Jews that are not going along, that are the, oh, what do you call them, Tony? I know the Hasmoneans, but before that they were the, I'll catch your name here in a minute. They wanted to hold on to old Judaism. It was kind of an embarrassment to the Jews wanted to be Hellenists. To the Jews that were not, it's kind of embarrassing to them. Those old folkies, that they're making us look bad, you know. And there was great antagonism from Jew against Jew here. Well, they'll pollute the sanctuary of strength, take away the daily sacrifice. They shall place the abomination that maketh desolate in there. I'll tell you what that is in a minute. The people that do know God shall be strong and do exploits. Now, that'd be the Hasmoneans. They're not going to put up with this. But they're going to be regulated out to the countryside. And all the folks in town, see, they're going to be the Hellenist people. But then they're going to be hoping with a little help. The Maccabees are going to come. Now, these Antiochus, he'll exalt himself and magnify himself above every god. He shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. Antiochus the fourth Epiphanes. The Jews called him Antiochus the fourth Epimanes. Epiphanes, I am a manifestation of God. That's what he's thinking of himself. You know, I mean, this is just, I'm like the appearance of God. That's how he framed himself. The Jews, Epimanes, played on that word. They called him Antiochus the fourth, the fool. That's what they called him. All right. Now, let me tell you about this Antiochus before we go on. Here's what he did. Is what he had been over thinking, I'm going to make my kingdom great. But he went into what would become to be called Asia Minor, Lydia. He went over there and the Romans stopped him. Said, no, look, you're not going to do this. You got to go back. And actually, it was his father that did that. And he was actually a captive in Rome for a while. He came back home. He got to be king. Said, I'll take Egypt. The Romans stopped him. You're not going to take Egypt. So you just leave Egypt. Well, he was mad. He came back through Israel so mad. And now this is really important. If I can't have Egypt, I've really got to have Palestine. And what he decided to do, he said, you know, my kingdom, it's a mess. I want everyone to be a Hellenist in my kingdom. I can pull everything together. We'll all get on the same page. And then we'll be united and we'll be a strong kingdom. Right now we're just too divided. I'm going to start with the Jews. I'm going to make them Hellenist. A lot of them want to be anyway. So I'm going to finish this off. So we build an amphitheater. Start with sports. You know, build a big gymnasium, what they did. And that's how that was kind of the Greek way. The Greek really glorified in the human body and what it could do. And you know what a power sports has over folks. Why folks will forsake church sometime for sports. Well, they got all involved in sports. But now here's the thing. If you want to do your sports in the gymnasium, we're going to have to do it like the Greeks. So you have to be unclothed. So all the young men participating in sport, you know how parents like to see their kids excel in sports. Well, they have to wear the uniform, which was nothing. So they all had to be naked out there and do their sports in the nude, and that brought circumcision right up. They made circumcision a shameful thing. Well, you gotta fit in, you know. They even figured out how they could do surgeries to hide circumcision. Can you imagine that? And so that they would fit in with all the Hellenists. Now then, they wanted fine public buildings, and they're really impressive, the Greek buildings. And they started giving their children Greek names, and they were wearing Greek dress, and then they built Greek theaters. Now, you know how important the movies are, and you know there are those that try to use Hollywood to influence the way people think. You know, the philosophies that are out there, they stick all that in the movies. That's what they did with the theaters. It was a way to communicate Greek ideas, Greek culture, so they built theaters, having that. But then they said, now we got to worship Greek deities. Well, they'd gotten so far into this, some of the Jews says, well, it's all right, we know an idol's nothing, but we can go ahead and do this. But it got worse. He went to the temple. He said, this is now going to be dedicated to Zeus. And then he put an image that looked like him up by the altar, that was supposed to be the image of Zeus in the temple. And then the pagan rituals associated with that kind of worship, that was that ritual fornication that we read about. They were doing that right on the temple grounds. And then it keeps getting worse. They said, we're going to sacrifice swine on the altar, and the Jews are going to be required to eat swine with the penalty of death. I mean, you eat this ham sandwich or we're going to kill you. So he's really pouring it on here. Then they required participation in the drunken orgies of Bacchus. Now you may have heard of him during the Olympics, the one that tried to look like Jesus at the Last Supper. You know, that's who they were celebrating. And the Jews are required to take part of that. They were forbidden to circumcise their children on penalty of death. In some accounts I read that would include the death of the child. No more Sabbath observance. No keeping of any Jewish feast. And all copies of the Hebrew scriptures are to be destroyed. Well, that wasn't going over with the old Jews wanting to hold it the old way. They leave Jerusalem. They're out in the little villages around. And they said, now we're going to take this all over. So they go to the villages. And they come across this fella named Mattathias, the priest. He'd gone to a little village of, how do you pronounce it?
Modin.
Modin. It's not far from Jerusalem. Modin. He was there, and they came there, an emissary of Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, and they built an altar to Zeus, and they got a pig that they're going to sacrifice on this altar, and says, now we're all going to do this, and these are Jews that didn't want to, said, now we're all going to do this, and we'll just all be together, and we're going to call on Mattathias. You set the good example for everyone. You come up here and sacrifice this pig. So he's up there by the altar, and they give him a sword to sacrifice the pig. And then it all gets quiet because he's not going to do it. And so the tension builds. And there's this Jew. He thinks, boy, I can't stand this tension. And I'm not going to let him make that old man. He's in his 80s or some say nearly 100 or older than that. He's an old, old man. I'm not going to have him humiliate him that way. I go up there and sacrifice that pig. So So he walked up there to sacrifice him, and Mattathias saw him, and when he saw what he was going to do, he took that sword and he run him through and killed that Jew. And then he turned right around and he killed that emissary that had come from Antiochus. And now he had five boys and they had their swords. Well, their swords came out and they took out after the group that had come with this fella. And the ones they didn't kill, they sent running back to Jerusalem just as fast as they could run. And they knew, oh boy, we have done it now. We're in trouble. So we got to leave town. And they headed to the hills. But the Jews thought, boy, that was great. Somebody finally did something about all this. And a lot of the Jews went off with them. Well, Antiochus knew he's going to have to go get them and take care of them. And they thought, this is just a little bunch of bandits here. So they sent a group out there. But Judas, the Maccabee. Now, the old man, he died within a year of that. But his son, Judas, we're down to him. Judas Maccabeus. They sent this group after him. He had these Jews organized. And they killed that group that came out there to get him. And they kind of did that. They kept sending a larger group. But every time they defeat a larger group, more and more Jews would go to the Maccabees. And before they knew it, they had a full-scale rebellion on their hand. So there was trouble elsewhere in the kingdom. So Antiochus assigned somebody else, says, I'm going to give you an army. You go down there and wipe these folks out. So he had a pretty good army. Had a lot of Jews in it, had Syrians in it, had others in it. He brought that army to a place we read about in the New Testament. It's not far from Jerusalem. Emmaus. They camped in Emmaus. And Judas knew that they were there. And that night, he surprised them in a night attack. And they destroyed that army. And now there was nothing between them and Jerusalem. So Judas and the Maccabees went right into Jerusalem and took Jerusalem and took the temple, and they took that image that looked like Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, and it was supposed to be Zeus, and they just beat it till it was powder. And they cleansed the temple. That's what we read about in Daniel. They'll cleanse the temple. Now the story goes that they had the menorah there at the temple, and they found a little curse of oil. Now you couldn't just use any regular oil. This had to be sanctified oil. And it was all polluted except this one little curse, and it hadn't had the seal broken. So they said, we'll use this to light those seven golden candlesticks, that menorah there. So they opened it up, and there was just enough oil for one day. So, well, we'll do it for a day. So they poured it all up, and they lit the menorah, and it burned, and it burned, and it burned. For 8 days, it kept burning. They took that as a miracle and a sign of God's blessing that they'd done the right thing. And by the time 8 days were up, they was able to sanctify some more oil, and they kept that thing burning. And so that is where Hanukkah comes from. And so if you have Jews around you around Christmas time, now there's not a lot in Warren County, but boy, they're thicker than Baptists down in South Florida where we were. And we had some neighbors in Lincoln, Nebraska that would, and they put this menorah in their window. And they just go through it, and they still do that till today. So when you hear about Hanukkah, that's what that's talking about. Well, with trouble elsewhere in the kingdom, they thought, boy, this isn't working out for us. Let's make a deal. And they told the Jews, said, listen, we'll let you worship the way you want to, and we'll leave you alone if you'll just swear your allegiance to us, and then we'll leave you be, and you can worship like you want to. Well, now, most of the Jews thought, well, that's a pretty good deal. The Hasidim, they thought that's what we're fighting for, and we've gained our objective. We got religious freedom. But the Maccabees, they said, no, you can't trust them. says we don't just need religious freedom, we have to have political freedom. And so that kind of divided the Jews up. And right at first, they thought, Judas, you're just too extreme here, and they ran him out of town. Well, he kept fighting, and the Syrians went after him, and he died fighting the Syrians. Now, what they did, they killed a Jewish hero. They thought he was a little extreme, but he was a hero. And that made the Jews think twice. You know, he's right. We don't have political freedom. We're not going to be able to keep our religious freedom. And so I kind of turned them back to that side. And Jonathan Maccabees took over the Maccabee faction. That was Judas's brother. Now, he came back to Jerusalem, and he was high priest then in Jerusalem. But he did something that Judas didn't do. Judas was a fighter. But Jonathan, now he was a fighter too, but he was also a diplomat. And he saw what was going on in Syria, how they were divided into two sides, and he decided, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick sides. And so he said, I could raise up an army and come help you up there on this side. And then he went out and made a deal with the Romans. And he went out and he won the favor of the Spartans. He had the Greeks and the Romans and a faction of the Syrians on his side. And they kind of let him have his way down there. And so he ruled for some time. Let's see. And then when he died, his brother, Simon Maccabees, got to be high priest. But now, Simon, he was kind of old when he got there. He was getting old. But he continued that policy, and the extreme Hellenists now were completely discredited. Okay, here's what I'm going to get in Tony's area a little bit. They kind of had this compromise. Says, you know, maybe we can be Jews and work with the Hellenists. And it kind of developed this party of Sadducees. While the others that says, no, we don't want to have anything to do with that, they became the Pharisees. And so this is about the time people started dividing into Sadducees and Pharisees. You can think of Sadducees kind of as moderate Hellenist, okay, at this time anyway. And then Simon was religiously a Pharisee, but see, the Sadducees were more politically astute. And so while Simon was a Pharisee, he's kind of glad he had these Sadducees as allies, because politically he was more aligned with them. But now he died. And when he did, his son, John Hyrcanus, whoops, I skipped that one. Okay, here. Forget Judas Aristobulus, Nick. Let's go to John Hyrcanus. His son, John Hyrcanus, became priest. Now, he was more of a Sadducee than Simon was, but he still called himself a Pharisee most of his reign. By the time he got through, I figured he was really a Sadducee by now. So you had these Pharisees and Sadducees to contend with. Now, John Hyrcanus, he decided we need a bigger kingdom. And he went down to Edomia. That's old Edom. He said, look, you all have to be Jews. So here these champions of religious freedom are imposing Judaism on the Edomites and said, you got to be circumcised. And so they made them do it. And so they just forced the Edomites to be circumcised and to be Jews. And then he went to Samaria. And you remember way back then when they were building the temple, and then they were building the walls, and the Jews that had married amongst the other people that the Babylonians had brought in, and they formed the Samaritans, that right? They wouldn't let them help. So they went and built their own temple on Mount Jezreel. Well, John Hyrcanus went up there and destroyed their temple. I mean, here he is, a champion of religious freedom, imposing Judaism on peoples that did not want that. But the kingdom was expanding. And the other thing he did, he made sure that the Jews could prosper. Now the Sadducees liked that. And so they were doing good economically and getting richer. And he's imposing Judaism on this area. Well, now here's where we get to Judas Aristobulus. He was John's son, John Hyrcanus. After he died, this fella got to be the high priest, and he was a Sadducee. I mean, he was just openly a Sadducee. He had four brothers, and he didn't want any competition, so he had one of them murdered. And then he had the other three put in prison, and two of them died in prison. And he continued this expansion. He extended the kingdom to the east and to the north, but he didn't live long, and he died. And that one brother that didn't die in prison got out of prison and came back, and Judas's widow, he married her. So he married his brother's wife after his brother was dead, but he married his brother's widow. And then he got to be high priest. And so while he was high priest, he continued to expand the kingdom. He kind of had the policy his brother had. And the kingdom now was almost as large as it was under the time of Solomon. So the Maccabees made quite an impression in that area, but he was opposed by the Pharisees. And what the Pharisees did, they went up to the Syrians and got aligned with the Syrians. Now these are the descendants of Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, and these Pharisees, they're the heirs of Mattathias the priest, and they aligned themselves against the high priest in Jerusalem. So you see how the political thing just kept shifting. And they tried to overthrow the king, and they were unsuccessful. And so what Judas Aristobulus did, he crucified 800 Philistines. So you see why the Pharisees and Sadducees had a hard time getting along in the New Testament. I mean, they had a history of not getting along. He crucified 800 of the Pharisees. Okay, I'm going to get through this a little early, and that'll be good. Now, he died. He died. And when he died, his wife, now she had been married to Judas Aristobulus. This was Alexander Genasius that did this. He was the one that was the brother that survived, and they had, I've gotten you mixed up. He's the one that crucified the 800 Philistines. But they both had the same wife, Judas Aristobulus and Alexander Genasius. They both had been married to the same woman, and so when he died, she took over. Okay? Salome Alexandra. And she reigned for several years. And she did a pretty good job. And compared to what they had been doing, the land had a lot of peace. Now, one of the reasons was because her brother was a ruler or one of the leaders among the Pharisees. So here she is, ruling in favor of the Sadducees, and her brother is one of the leaders of the Pharisees, and she and her brother got along, and so it kind of helped everything settle somewhat between the Sadducees and Pharisees, and she was able to rule for an extended term, and the things were looking up pretty good in that it wasn't without its problems, but they were doing pretty good. But then she died. Well, when she died, she has these two sons, Hyrcanus the Second, and she had made him high priest. But his brother, Aristobulus the Second, he was in charge of the army. Well, Aristobulus really wanted to run things, and so he ran Hyrcanus off. And Aristobulus the Second was running everything in Jerusalem. And Hyrcanus, he was out over here. He was kind of put out. And he wasn't that great of a leader, but he could be led. So while he was out of pocket, and Aristobulus the Second, now they're both kind of fighting over who gets to be the ruler there in Jerusalem and in Judea. Well, there's this fellow called Antipater. Antipater was an Edomian. He's one of those that had been forced to become a Jew, okay? And he was quite diplomatic. He never ruled, but he knew how to pull the strings of the kings and the rulers. So he goes to High Crassus and says, you know, we can take Jerusalem back and put you back on charge. I've got this friend, Aretas. Now, Aretas, the Nabateans, is that how you pronounce it?
Nabateans,
okay. Aretas, he's king of the Nabateans. They're the Arabs that had come in on the far side of the Jordan River, all right? So he goes over to him and says, look, we can help Hyrcanus get back in charge. So the Jews with Hyrcanus and Aretas, they go up and they besiege Jerusalem. Well, now both of these brothers, they're fighting Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, and both of them had asked Pompey to come in on their side. I'll tell you the story of Pompey next week. But see, there were pirates out on the sea, and Romans having trouble with their trade, and they asked Pompey, could you do something about these pirates? He said, well, I could, but you'll have to give me an army and a navy, and I want you to let me have total control in that area for however many years he had bargained for. And so they gave it to him. So he just went over to the east. He just started running everything. He got rid of those pirates. He took over Syria. He wanted Egypt. Oh, I'll get into that next week. I'm going to talk about the Romans next week. Because you get Cleopatra and Julius Caesar and Pompey and all this stuff. But they appealed to him. Said, he's got his army over here. He can take care of this. So this Antipater, however you pronounce his name, he goes to Pompey. He said, let me tell you what's going on. And he works it out. So Pompey decides, yeah, I see what you're talking about. We got to get rid of this Aristobulus fella. So he walks up to Jerusalem while they're besieged, and he finishes the job. We're going to take Jerusalem. So Pompey takes Jerusalem. Now, he had to have a fight for it, and he killed 12,000 Jews taking Jerusalem. And then he entered the holy place. He'd always heard about this temple and this holy of holies. And he thought, I'm going to see what's in there. And he went behind the curtain and looked around, and there was nothing in there. And he was kind of disappointed in that. But that's what Pompey did. Now, this is where the Romans entered the picture. After he did all this, he handed the kingdom back to Hyrcanus II. But this Antipater, Hyrcanus was the king and the high priest, but Antipater was the ruler behind the scenes. And Hyrcanus had decided, I've got to depend on this Edomian for what I do. So he was kind of the one manipulating things behind the scenes. Now, he had a son, this Antipater, the Edomian. He had a son, and he started fixing things up for his son to have influence on what was going on. And his son was Herod, the son of Antipater, who in our next story is going to be Herod the Great. And that's going to bring us then into the New Testament times. And I'm going to tell you next week about the early Roman era. Okay? We've got about 60 years. It was about 60 years before Christ when Pompey walked into Jerusalem. And then what is happening in the larger Mediterranean between Herod. We're going to learn about Pompey, Julius Caesar, Cleopatra, and Marcus Brutus, and Mark Antony, and Octavius Augustus, and how Herod the Great was able to he was so wily. I tell you, Herod could switch sides just right after another, and he just kept, every time he just switched sides and rise in power through all this. And there's a reason they called him the Great. I'll tell you next week. He was great in cruelty, and that's what we remember. And let me tell you what, he was a great politician. And he was a great military leader. And he was a great builder. And we're going to talk about the reason he called Herod the Great. But he was also a great, evil, cruel man.
A great murderer.
Yeah. Now, Pompey, he killed so many of his own sons that Caesar said, I'd rather be his pig than his son, because he wouldn't eat pork, see. But we'll talk about that next week. So I'm put about 5 minutes early. Went 5 minutes overtime last week and made up for it this week. Okay? That's where we're going. Let's have a prayer. Father in heaven, we're thankful for all thy blessings. We're so thankful for the book of Daniel that lays this out ahead of us. And then for the historical records where we see thy hand of providence working all things out as thou hast said, preparing the way for thy son. May these studies build our faith. Now, Father, we're thankful for the food that we have and the fellowship and joy we have in one another. In Jesus' name, amen.